阅读、科技、旅行，
生活可以很大，对话设计、学习思考不嫌太多。这里是 iTunes 获奖播客狗熊有话说，一听就停不下来的哦。
Hello， 你好，这里是大狗熊的读书时间。今天呢，要和你分享一本在六月份刚刚出版的新书。这本书的主题和书名呢，都非常适合当下这个世界的形势，以及在工作中、在职场中的人所面临的现状。书名叫做《Forever Employable》，永远有工作。作者呢，是在用户体验设计界鼎鼎大名的 Jeff Goldthelf， 就是这本书了。我们来一起看看吧。在现在这个疫情还没有全面结束，而且可能还会再次的掀起第二波浪潮的时代呢，工作能够保住是很多人的主题。而且呢，我们都面临的太多的不确定性，不知道接下来世界的形势会怎么样，自己工作中有没有太多的变数，有没有一些以往没有预料到的市场的动态会发生，这些都是很多具体在职场中的人需要考虑的问题。那么 Jeff 这本书的书名，其实在一开始打动我呢，就来自于他的下面这句话， Forever Employable, How to start looking for work and let your next job find you. 如何开始你的工作，而且让你的下一份工作能够找到你。那么 Jeff 呢，他自己在用户体验设计界呢，是一位非常知名的专家。在2012年的时候，他出版了一本书叫做 Lean UX。 那么这本书呢，可以说是我给大家直接看一下啊。那么这本书啊，是用户设计界、用户体验设计界必读的一本经典。那么我也因为在两年前求职的时候阅读了这本书，而且在面试的时候呢，大量使用了书中的一些观点，所以能够帮助我找到了这份现在入职的这个工作。所以我个人是非常认可 Jeff 他的专业能力的。那么这本 Forever Employable 呢，其实算是一本非常个人化的书，因为它更多是用了一个自己的一个视角来讲述了一个故事。那么讲述了一个自己在职场中一直从入职、努力工作、成为行业的专家，然后成为那个领域的这个经理，能够管十几个人的时候，忽然有一天呀，他感到了一个非常强烈的危机感。在35岁生日的时候，他用自己的这个个人故事来说，就是在35岁生日的时候呢，他忽然一下子从梦中惊醒，然后吓出一身冷汗。什么呢？为什么呢？因为他觉得自己的这份工作目前来说是 overpaid， 也就是被过高的支付了工资了。那么在之后呢，他其实已经很难有职业上的再进一步的选择。当你做到了一个公司的这个设计总监的时候，其实不太有可能成为一个设计 CEO、 设计执行官这样的一个角色。那么全球在这方面的工作可能也就那么一两百个啊，除了大家熟悉的像苹果呀，或者是一些大型的公司之外，很多中型的公司企业一般做到设计总监、创意总监已经到顶了。那么在这个岗位上，他被支付的工资是非常高的。也就是说如果碰到一些职业上的变化的话，他的风险其实还挺大的。然后呢，你在一个管理的岗位呢，自己的技术技能是没有被过多的去磨练，那么可能会慢慢退化。再加上因为有了家人、有了孩子，那么在40岁以后、30多岁、40岁以后的这个企业中层呢，花在工作上的时间会明显的减少，精力也会减少。 那么这些都是需要去面临的问题。那么他就在想，如果几年后自己面临这个失业，或者是面临职业上的这种危机会怎么办，吓出了一身冷汗。于是呢，开始做了一个自己的这个计划，就是一个5年计划。他的目标很明确，就是我要做到我能够 forever employable， 能够永远有活干。他具体的在书里面提到的这个技巧呢，有5条，我给大家简单说一下。第一条呢叫做 plant your flag。 那么这条呢其实非常容易理解，就是当我们要成为某个领域的专家，或者是你要在某个领域有所建树，有所这个代表的时候呢，你需要先确定自己要做的这个领域是什么，在哪个领域你能够最有发言权，最有专业上的代表性，最有权威，或者说最符合你的兴趣。那么也可以用我们之前在讲书 Ikigai 的时候提到的这个找到自己的 Ikigai。 那么 Jeff 呢，他自己也做过这方面的分析，因为在他职业初期，他曾经在一个音乐唱片公司做实习生，因为他喜欢音乐，然后另外呢也在这个软件公司打过一段时间的工。后面发现在音乐行业你要真正能出头是非常难的，是充满了太多的不确定性，所以最终他选择我做软件行业。那么做软件行业呢，慢慢的他找到了自己的这样的一个职业上的一个独一无二的一个领域，也就是在当时呢敏捷开发，也就是 Agile 刚刚开始兴起。然后呢设计方面呢是使用这个 Design Thinking 设计化思维。那么还有一个创业的趋势呢是使用这个精益创业 Lean Startup。 那么也就是说有不同的这种方法论和不同的这个出发点，在我们做一个产品的时候呢，会有产品经理会这样去想，设计主管会这样去想，设计师会这样去想，而这个程序员呢会这样去想，那么会有不同的出发点，怎么把这些衔接在一起呢？那么 Jeff 呢，他找到了自己的这个领域，就是Lean UX 精益 UX。 那么通过这样的一个专业的领域的定位呢，他把自己变成了一个这个领域的专家，别人一提起 Jeff Gothelf 就知道他是一个 Lean UX guy。 那么找到自己的这个领域非常难，我现在也在找我的领域到底是什么。那么目前来说，狗熊我的领域可能是一个生活在西方的中国用户体验设计师OK。 那么我也还在不断的去摸索自己的这样的一个定位是什么样的。所以第一步要真正能够实现，就是永远都有事情做，你的事业永不落幕的第一步呢，就是 plant your flag， 插下你的旗子，然后说这个地方是我的啊。那么怎么去找到自己的这个旗子，怎么去插下来呢？这个就很具体了，需要去想一些办法。 OK， 那么第二步呢，其实就开始干嘛呢？ tell your story， 讲述你的故事。那么这个故事其实我们一直在说，人都容易受故事打动，或者说都容易受自己独一无二的体验打动。每个人的经历都有独一无二的一面，那么如何去讲述你个人的这种故事和你的这个职业上的这些故事。其实我在阅读这本书的时候，有一个很大的感受，真的是每个人都有自己的那个出发点，每个人都有自己的一些不同的经历和情感，但情感上的东西可能是共通的，经历却是独一无二的。当你分享你的经历的时候，能够贯穿一些别人能够体验到的情感的话，可能你的说服力和你的故事的传播的范围会变得更广。我自己在分享自己之前求职5个月没有工作的那个期间的感受和经历的时候呢，其实就获得了特别多的共鸣和别人的这个互动。 OK， 那么这个是第二步，就是讲述你的故事。通过什么方式讲述呢？其实现在有很多的渠道，对吧？有社交媒体，有自媒体，有视频，有种种各种各样的方式。 OK， 那么到了第三步呢，就是 follow your path， 特别是你的 new path。 找到你的新的道路。那么这一点怎么去理解呢？其实就是在当你开始找到自己的这个定位，然后不断的去输出内容，去讲述你的故事的时候，慢慢的你会发现你开始有了新的机会，比如说会有可能会有新的公司给你发 offer， 或者对你感兴趣，或者你会收到别人邀请你出版或者开辟一个新的频道的一个邀请等等等等，会有各种各样的这种 new path 会出来了。以前你的职业可能规划的非常简单，我就在这个公司努力工作，然后升职变成从这个小白变成部门经理，变成项目经理，变成主管等等等等等等，这样一步一步来。但慢慢你会发现，当你开始去讲述你的故事的时候，你会有一些新的道路会打开了，就像这个 Jeff 他自己在走的时候会发现 OK， 那么这个时候呢就 follow your new path， 这个时候当然需要一些勇气了。就我自己来说，我来到新西兰就是一个 follow my new path， 啊，那个是另外的故事了，以后再讲。那么第四步，到了第四步呢 ，teach。其实当你开始输出你的故事，当你开始走寻你的新的道路，当你开始不同的去用你的故事去承载你想要表达的内容，去增强你的专业上的领域的这个说服力的时候呢，你就慢慢的变成了一个老师，你就慢慢开始传授别人东西。那么这里我不喜欢用中文的这个传授或者是教育啊这样的词，更多是一种分享，或者说更多是大家共同去学习。那么同样的，像 Jeff 他个人呢，他在开创了这个 Lean UX 这个领域之后呢，就开始去参加了很多这种会议论坛，变成嘉宾去分享去演讲，而且呢他慢慢的把这些演讲的内容呢写成了自己的第一本书。那么这个过程呢其实慢慢就变成了一个教育的一个过程，而且通过去教别人你能够获得更多的收获，这是我们都知道的。那么到了最后一步， Give it all away，就是把你所有的内容的全部都奉献出去，用一种免费的方式让更多的人能接受。那么他自己举了很多例子，比如说他在写完这本书 Lean UX 之后呢，用去参加一些这个工作室或者是这个付费的别人的演讲，他给别人的要求就是你能不能用不用支付我报酬啊，因为他的开价还挺高的，就是好，至少是四位数的这个演讲费，那么不用支付我这个具体的钱，而是用购买我的书，然后呢赠送给其他的人，用这种方式来支付。那么更多的把你的这个专业的领域的内容呢传递出去，免费的传递出去。那么这是它的五个步骤。这五个步骤呢，不是说一天做一个，一天做一个，而是持续的不断去更新，不断去延展，最后呢，塑造起了你个人的那样的一个专业的形象。那么或者说你的这个专业的价值，别人也能够感受到，然后你就变成了一个 forever employable。那么 Jeff 他个人的经历是这样的，他在一家公司入职，成为设计师，工作了几年成为主管，工作了十几年成为一个相对资深的主管，管了十几个人，然后呢开始在工作中研发出把精益创业、设计化思维和敏捷开发这三个在产品开发领域的前沿的学科方法论呢集合到一起，变成了一个更具体的设计主导的一个方法论，叫做 Lean UX。那么他把这样的一个自己的方法论呢，在不同的 meetup 研讨会会议上进行分享，进行讲述，不断的去讲述的同时呢，他也在慢慢的把这套思维呢变得成型，然后呢开始写自己的第一本书。写书的时候呢非常的痛苦啊，每天他去上班的在车上，在因为他在书里也提到了，就是每天他去曼哈顿上班的45分钟的车程上呢去写这本书，有的时候呢也会早起，比如说早上6:30起来写， 或者呢请他的央求啊，愧求他的老婆呢能够给他周末留几个小时去写书。写了原计划6个月写完，实际呢写了2年，跟我个人的经历非常相似，我的第一本书也是这样的。那么写完书之后呢，他还在做自己的工作，做了一段时间，但是他已经变成了这个领域的专家，参加了更多的研讨会和讲座。后面呢开始觉得有客户找到他能够做客户的这个项目，这个时候呢他就觉得我就独立出来成为一个 contractor 或者叫 freelance 啊，那么这样的一个身份就是自由职业，然后帮客户做顾问，做这个项目的主导啊，和朋友成立了一个自己的公司。那么现在呢他生活在西班牙的巴塞罗那啊，已经是这个数字游民的一个代表，那么可以跨越不同的项目去工作。这是他个人的故事。那么就我来说呢，我阅读这本书感受其实更多就是因为在新冠疫情全球蔓延，而且看不到一个具体的结果的这个时候呢，我们可能会想自己的职业应该怎么去规划，如何能够变成一个永远都有职业上的职场竞争力的人。那么从阅读这本书里面呢，我获得了几个收获吧。第一个收获呢，就是很多时候我们在公司工作是替公司去完成他的项目，那么为自己或者说做自己的这个个人品牌个人的项目呢，其实要站在一个你自己是老板的一个角度。那么比如说我是做用户体验设计师，我如何去设计自己的个人品牌，让更多人能够知道我，或者说知道狗熊所代表的东西，我也在找这样的一个方式，所以还在尝试了。那么第二呢，就是一些可以去迁移的技能是非常重要的。在这个时代有几个技能目前我发现的，第一是写作能力，第二是表达能力和沟通能力，第三呢是提问的能力。其实这几个能力呢都是在任何领域任何行业都会需要到，而且呢是当你发展之后永远不会过时的一种能力。那么特别像是第一个写作能力，可能很多人会觉得写作有什么稀奇的，那么会发现很多能够对别人产生影响的人，其实第一步就是能够很清晰很生动的能够把自己的故事和自己的感受写下来。因为在现在网络时代呢，你写下来的东西就是你的代表，就代表了你。那么同样的，其实像很多人会说我自媒体了，现在都是录音频了或者是录视频了，写作能力其实不重要也很重要。因为当你要去表达的时候，你需要先用写的方式把你要表达的东西你的思考呢沉淀下来，这也是我自己想要提高的几个能力。当然作为一个双语的从业者，怎么说呢，这个双语从业者就是说双语者吧，说两种语言的人，那么我现在更聚焦在如何能够用英文去自由的写作提问和沟通表达。 OK， 这就是今天的这本书 Jeff Goldfield 的 Forever Employable， 希望你喜欢。更多的其他的书籍和感受，那么记得关注大狗熊的 YouTube 频道 Bear Talk 狗熊有话说，也希望你能够觉得这个视频喜欢的话点一个赞，我们下一本书里再见，拜拜。
It's Jeff.
Hi Jeff. Hi. How's things going?
Hey, Harry.
I'm good. Thank you. Thank you for accepting this meeting. Yeah.
My pleasure.
Yeah, it's my pleasure and honor to have you here, because your book really impacted me like a few years ago when I started my UX career. And I know you're super busy as a UX leader. So yeah, it's great to talk with you in person about your new book. Yeah, so you're joining from US right now?
No, I live in Spain. And so I'm in Barcelona, right. Which is, yeah, this is, so no, not definitely not in the US, and kind of happy about that.
Right. Yeah, it seems.
Where are you, Bear?
I'm in Auckland, New Zealand. So in the South Hemisphere. Yeah.
And I've been there. Yeah. I like it there.
You've been there? You've been here?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, several times. We considered moving there when we were considering where to move when we moved abroad. Mm-hmm. We considered moving to New Zealand. We really liked Auckland. Wellington is nice. It's just really, really far away.
Yeah, and you know the time difference sometimes is really annoying if you want to connect. With some like clients in US or other continent, so it feels sometimes you need to find a maybe awkward time for meetings and things like that. So yeah, but yes, I really appreciate that you organized this meeting. So a little bit introduction for myself. Probably I'll go first. As you know, my name is Bear, and I am a UX designer who works at Auckland, New Zealand, and also I've been doing design for more than a decade, but at first just as a graphic designer, worked for large, small companies. And also during the 2010, I started to found my first design agency, and also started to do digital design because that was the trend in that days. And around 2012, I also wrote a book about Apple's equipment and tips and tricks, things like that, and started this podcast, Bear Talk, more about technology, design, and personal improvement, things like that. And also podcast won Apple's app Editor's Choice in 2013. And
nice.
And for design, that career, actually I didn't join a university to learn things from that, just learning by doing. And around 4 years ago, I moved to New Zealand. So everything needs to be started all over again. I find the first job as a multimedia designer, which is majorly about as a support for marketing. And then I decided to move on to focus on user experience design, but I don't have local experience. And then I did some research. A lot of friends recommended your book. So I started from your, I think it's a small book, Agile Lean and Design Thinking. So I started from that book and really found, wow, it's great to know these basic principles, especially when I'm going to work in the industry. And then I started to read your Lean UX, and that's really helpful. I think that's something I need to say. In this book, Forever Employable, you mentioned in the beginning, like you read a book about, I think it's informational architecture for World Web. And it changed your life. And a few years ago, you just met the author and thanked them in person. So this is what I want to do at first in this podcast, because your book Lean UX helped me to find my first UX job in Auckland without any local experience before. So it really helps me. So yeah, thank you for writing that book.
My pleasure. It's always good to hear, man. Always good. Like, really great. You know, you write a book in the hopes that it helps somebody do their job better, and then you hear stories like that where somebody says, hey, somebody helped me find a job, that type of thing, and that's huge. So thank you for saying that. That means a lot.
I really, really appreciate that. And also, I found this new book, Forever Employable. It's drawn my attention just from the title, you know, just from the name of the book, because in this uncertainty time, it's like being employable, especially if you want to be forever employable, is kind of like a ultimate goal for any professionals. And that's why I thought, wow, Jeff has this new book going to publish, so I need to read it. So I bought the book on Amazon and reached out to you and asked if can I read it, a trial version before it published. And yeah, and I do find this book is really, it's from a different perspective. It's not just about a specific subject, but it's about a journey of how you plan your career and how you share your experience. So I really want to hear more about the stories behind the book. Yeah, so that's why I reached out to you for this discussion. Yeah.
Terrific. Thank you for that. I'm happy to talk about the book.
Yeah, it's great. Because I think, because it's your fourth book, or it's not.
It's number four. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So yeah. I think for every book, probably as author, you might always have a driving reason in the beginning, like a reason, the major reason you decided, okay, I would like to write a book about this topic. So what is that reason? What was the reason that make you decide to write this book?
This book was in many ways a response to feedback that I was receiving from people who were reading my other books and looking at what I was doing for a living and how I was doing it. Almost on a weekly basis, someone would send me an email asking, how did you build your business? How did you get a book deal? How did you build up this platform for yourself? And I appreciate those questions, and I appreciate that there isn't a single answer. And so I kind of kept that in my backlog for a long time, because I've been getting those questions for a while. And then finally, about a year ago, I had an opportunity to give a talk to some leaders, product leaders, tech leaders, design leaders. And the talk they asked me to give was titled The Author's Journey. They asked me to tell my story of how I went from designer to manager to team leader to author. And I saw this as an opportunity to at least start to put together a story arc in response to all of these demands, all these, not demands, but these questions that I was getting about my career. And after I told that story and I saw how it resonated with that particular group, and this is a fairly senior group of folks, I decided that it was time to finally write this book, right? Tell this story. And, you know, initially I thought maybe it would be a blog post or a series of blog posts, but I realized there was enough here to put together a book, not a long book, but enough to put together a book, tell the story, offer some practical guidance, and really try to help some folks as they begin to explore what to do next in their career. So that was the story of kind of how I've been thinking about it, and kind of what finally got me to get off my butt and actually start doing something about it.
Yeah, that was awesome. Especially you mentioned that story arc. It's also a great point I got from this book, like how to be a good storyteller. And you mentioned that it's happened during a meeting for the leaders in the industry. So I suppose the book, the audience of the book, of this book is not about, not for the leaders, but for like another audience. Do you have a audience persona
So the primary persona that I wrote this book for is the mid-career knowledge worker. So you're 5 to 15 years into your knowledge working career. What's knowledge work? Knowledge work is stuff you do in an office, basically. So whether you're a designer, a software engineer, a marketer, you work in the finance department, you're an HR business partner, any kind of work that you do in an office basically is knowledge work these days. And so that's who the primary persona was for this book. The idea being that, you know, kind of what's the next thing I'm going to do in my career? And how do I start to make sure that every time that there is a crisis within my organization, outside my organization, in the world, and companies begin to panic, I don't have to panic, or at least I don't have to panic as much, because I've created some kind of a safety net around myself. Not a financial one per se, but a recognition, a reputational safety net that, you know, guarantees to some extent that the next opportunities are going to find me. That was the primary persona, right? Focusing on folks who, every time there's a reorg in their company, panic and have to update their CV immediately and start applying for jobs, right? There's a crisis, right? I lived through the first dot-com crash. That was a crisis. That was really difficult. And we were chasing jobs for years there, for a couple of years at least, right? We have a pandemic we're dealing with now. That's a crisis. There are people who I've talked to, and to be fair, I know a lot of people are suffering. I know a lot of people have lost their jobs and are struggling to find their next work. There are other people who are thriving in this pandemic. And I think it's worth looking at those people and understanding why. They're not thriving on others' misery, to be clear. They're not taking advantage of the situation, but they've positioned themselves in such a way that ensures that the value that they bring is not context dependent. And I think that's a really interesting thing to consider. And it's one of the things that I've been talking about a lot is, you know, you think of yourself as, maybe you think of yourself as defined by your job title. I'm a designer, I'm a project manager, I'm a financial analyst. But what I would challenge you to do, and what I hope I challenge you to do when you read the book, is to really reconsider the core value that you deliver. You know, if I was to ask you the question, what problem do you solve for others, right? What problems, why do people come to you, right? What problems do you solve for those folks? And you were to break that down into the core value that you deliver, and you can recognize that, then I think, and I hope, it becomes easier to find new ways, new channels to deliver that value. And that's what makes you forever employable. So for example, right, I help, you know, my tagline that I worked very, very hard on, and it's on my LinkedIn profile, is I help companies build great products, and I help executives build the cultures that build great products. Now, that's one aspect of it. You could actually boil that down even further. And, you know, I help organizations focus on the real problem and then deliver solutions and stories that are meaningful to the people they're serving. And so today I do that through product design and development and product management and agility and that type of thing. But there's no reason why you can't do that by designing a social justice organization, There's no reason why you can't deliver that value, you know, in a virtual setting rather than an in-person setting. There's a variety of different ways that you can take what you do and deliver it, and that's what I hope people get out of this.
Yeah, that's really, really deep. I think that's because, when I read the book, I do find that there are some resonate that I feel like during the middle, mid-career, like in the middle of my career journey, and it's time to think about what is the thing I really want to do. And before that, like the common sense, if you go to the go to a corporation and just climb from the on the ladder and upskill your experience and skill set and get ready for the next role. So yeah, it feels like just running on a treadmill, but like this book and also some other similar books, I think it's really reveals the value from a different perspective. It's just like that example I just came to my mind. People always thought, like from the marketing perspective, people would like to buy a drill. It's just for the hole. But actually, they don't need a hole. They need a hook on the shelf or on the wall. They just need a shelf to put all the things on the shelf to make them feel better. So actually, they need that feeling. So that's what they need. They don't need they don't need a hole or they don't need a drill either. So that's right. Yeah, I think that's really great to hear. Like what you've found from your personal experience, and it's time to get all together as a book. But I think lead me to another question. It's like your path is, like your career path is quite successful in the common value, in the common perspective. So you started working in a specific field and kept upskilling, then became the expert and team leader in the field. And then, like what you mentioned in the book, attended some conference, all kind of the senior conference, and started to write the book, and became one of the like quite successful in the industry, and then started your new path as as an independent consultant or like a keynote speaker. So that's a new path. I think for many people still in the early or in the middle stage of the journey of the career, do you suggest them to do the same steps as you in the same order, or they can start it to start to plant a flag, as you mentioned in the book, and like to tell them their story? Or you think like the priority they should become the expert in that field first, or become the leader at first, then they can start to produce content or just to show their value in another way. What do you reckon about this
I recommend that you, if you're at the beginning of your career or you don't feel like you're an expert in your domain, just start telling your story. Just start sharing the experiences that you're having. Tell your story, tell people about what you're doing, how it's going, what's working, what's not working, what you're learning, where you're succeeding, where you're failing, and practice telling that story. You're doing a lot of different things when you start sharing your story publicly. You are, first of all, you're practicing writing or communicating. That's very, very important. Second, you're getting a sense, you're finding your voice, and you're getting a sense of how to best communicate to people and what resonates with people. Third, you're building a body of work and you're starting to own a space. You're starting to plant that flag so that when the time comes for you to take some position of leadership and somebody Googles your name, right, there's a whole body of work about what you've been doing and what you've been up to and how you've been working and what's been happening, right? And this is somebody shared this with me. I didn't discover this myself, but somebody shared this quote from Gary Vaynerchuk with me, where he says, don't create document. And the difference being is that creating means sitting down and explicitly working on something and producing it and polishing it and making it beautiful. That takes a lot of time, and you know, perfect ends up being the enemy of the good enough in those situations in many cases. Yeah. And so the suggestion is just start documenting. Today I did this, the next day I did that. It's blogging, right? The whole reason blogging came about, it was just digital diary keeping, right? And so again, start telling your story. You can't be a leader, you can't take a leadership position without credibility, without reputation, without some level of command of a subject. That's true. So why not start to build that now, so that when it comes time for you to take a leadership role, there's a foundation that justifies you getting into that role. And so that's the thing that I would recommend for you to do now. In whatever way you can, start telling that story consistently in the same place and start sharing your learnings publicly.
Yep, that was awesome, because I think from another book, Show Your Work by Austin Kleon, he also mm-hmm. mentioned the same thing, like don't mind being perfection. So just start here to share, and there will be always audience at the same level as you, or maybe, and you don't know where they are, but they probably would like to read or see what the content you're creating for them. Yeah, that's a great advice. And also I think some skills for no matter what the title we are, product designers, product managers, or other titles, some skills are in common, like communication and presentation and storytelling. So and also I do find that writing is critical for everyone in the modern age. Like there are too many that's really important for us to practice, and I do believe that that's a great advice. So I think for the book, there's a one major question about the model of the forever employable and to be an entrepreneur. So what's the difference of being forever employable in this book, if there's a difference, or like to being an entrepreneur or start somebody's own business? So is there any difference between these two things from your book's perspective? And what do you suggest, like in this book? My assumption is that from this book's perspective, you suggest the readers to start build a safe net for his or her career in the future, but not suggest them to start their own business right now. Does that make sense, or what do you recommend?
I think you need to take an entrepreneurial approach to your career. It does not necessarily mean that you have to start your own business. It does not necessarily mean that you have to be a consultant at the end of this journey. But what it does mean is that you do have to take a deliberate, continuous learning, continuous improvement approach to personal development, growth, and your career. In other words, don't let your career happen to you, but take control of it, right? So what can you do to build the kind of foundation around yourself that will provide you with the most options, that will return on those investments that you're putting in today, whether it's going to work every day, whether it's, you know, sacrificing some family time for, you know, just trying to get that promotion? How is that going to pay off in the long run? And how do you leverage that to to build more value for your stakeholders, right? And your stakeholders are your employers, your colleagues, your team, your community, the industry, etc., right? How do you start to build that around yourself? And if you can take that entrepreneurial look, that product-based, it's kind of a product thinking approach to it, right? I deliver this service. Who do you deliver it to, right? Who are your personas? What behavior change do you want to see in them to tell you that you're delivering value? How will you know the best way to do that? How will you test your way and learn your way to the best way to do that? To me, that's the kind of entrepreneurial approach that you should be thinking about as you examine sort of the next step in your career. Now, look, for some people, that may end up as a freelance consultant career. For others, they may start their own business. For others, they're just going to stay in-house. They're going to continue to work in-house, but they're going to create this body of work around themselves and this reputation and this recognition that guarantees that they will be successful within their current organization, and or they will start to draw attention from other organizations who value those kinds of contributions even more than others.
Yeah,
as well. And so to me, that's the entrepreneurial approach here. But don't misunderstand. Like, I don't expect everybody to quit their jobs and start blogging tomorrow. That's not what the book is about. The book is really about taking that very, very explicit look at how can I treat my career as a product or a service, and then how do I experiment my way to creating the kind of reputation that allows me to be forever employable.
Yeah, I see what you mean. It's more like take the entrepreneur spirit and also keep doing things continuous. Like if you already find the right direction, and just focus on providing value for different stakeholders. Sorry, I just quote directly from what I'm familiar with, like stakeholders, and I think it's more like to build the anti-fragile fragility of your career. Like if you have enough, like if you have as many approach as you can do to make it stronger, and it's not afraid. It will be not afraid of any crisis like the pandemic, and it's happening now. But it's like you can always find a new path, and there will be a lot of possibilities waiting in front of you. Does that make sense from this understanding? Is that what you want to say?
Can you ask the question again? I'm not sure I understood the question.
Yeah, I think that the question is more like the suggestion. Because before that, I just said something about my understanding. It's not the mm-hmm. question, because the question before I was asking what's the main difference between being forever employable and being an entrepreneur? But I think after that, you already answered this question. Yeah. Mm. So let's how about we just jump to some lighter topic? Yeah. Like I'm really curious about how did you write this book? Like how do you plan, research, and test your like the topics you're going to talk, or like how much time did you spend on writing? And yeah. Which part was the hardest, things like that. Really curious about the whole procedure.
So this was interesting. This is the first book where I've treated this project very differently than all the other books. The other books were technical books or business books, and they were focused on a very specific practice or management style or something along those lines. This book was very personal. I wrote about my experience. I wrote about my fears and really it was difficult to get these ideas out there because I've never written anything like this. I wasn't terribly comfortable talking about it, and I wasn't sure how it was going to resonate with the people who have been listening to me so far. I worked with a ghostwriter on this effort to help me get those ideas out in a way where I didn't filter out the bits that I was uncomfortable about. And so for me, that was a really interesting new way of working. Now, the ghostwriter works in a thousand different ways, right? You can have that person simply just write your whole book for you. In this particular case, I laid out a table of contents, we reviewed it, we talked about it, and then we decided that he was going to interview me about everything in the table of contents. And then what happened was he recorded the interviews. And he used the transcript from the interviews as the raw material for each chapter. And so what you have, and then he would send me drafts, and then I would edit them, and then we'd go back and forth on that, kind of that way. So what you have in there are my conversational words. And I speak very differently from how I normally write. And so in this project, when you read this book, at least for me, I hear me the way that I speak. And that was at first a bit uncomfortable. I've learned to get used to it. And what I see now is that it's resonating broadly with a lot of folks as well. And so I'm very grateful for the person that I worked with on this, because he enabled me through the way that we work together to really get my true voice into this book in a way that doesn't stifle my personality, I guess. And I'm really happy about that, because it is a personal book. And so you want personality in there. And that was very important, and that came out nicely.
If you, like in this book you mentioned, it all started from your 35th birthday. So it started to feel, okay, something I need to do from now. And then after 5 years, I did a step by step, and finally arrived forever employable. So if you could go back to the 35th birthday to start again, what are the things you would do differently this time?
I would start sooner, honestly. It took me a decade. It took me a decade to realize that this panic, that panic attack that I had on my 35th birthday, kind of woke me out of this sleep. There was a bit of sleep, right? Sleepwalking that I was doing. I was, following the traditional path, go to college, get a degree, get a job, get a promotion, get a little bit more money, a slightly better title, manage some more people. And it took me a decade to realize that there are other ways to do this. And so if I had to do it all over again, I would just start sooner. I didn't start writing till I was 30. I didn't really make an explicit attempt at making it a career until 35. To me, if I would have started when I was 25, I'd have a 10-year head start on this. And I think, to me, that's the thing I would do differently, is start sooner.
Yeah, that's really great too. For everyone to start as soon as possible, because you can always share the things you've learned and the mistake you make. So that's always valuable for others, no matter what level it is, like senior or middle or just junior. That's always fine. Yeah, and also from my personal experience, like when I create content on podcast or YouTube, some people reached out to me and said one of the major questions they ask is that they don't know what they want to do, which means they don't know where to start, or to, like what you mentioned in the book, the step one is to plant a flag. So they don't know where to plant that flag. And also, this could be it might be with you forever. And a lot of people, it's just feel really frightened to make the commitment about this is the thing, this is direction I will work my entire life on this. So do you have any suggestion, or like what did you do? Like, how did you find the how did you make the decision of what your flag is in the very beginning? Did you do some research, ask other people? So any advices for this question?
For me, it was obvious because I'd finally gotten to a point where I was facing a work-related challenge that many, many other people would have as well. And this is bringing Agile and UX together. And so many folks were having that challenge. And I was in a position where I was lucky enough to try to solve it with my team and with others outside of my team, and we were making some progress. And in doing so, I was writing about it. And to me, when that started resonating, it was very, very clear that this was where I was going to plant my flag, because I'd already had a significant amount of UX experience. I was picking up Agile experience, and I was trying to bring the two together at a time where really very few people had succeeded in doing so. And in fact, most people had not succeeded in doing so.
Yeah.
So there was a tremendous opportunity to have a conversation about how to get this right. And along with my team at the Ladders and colleagues outside of that team, we were able to start a global conversation about solving this big problem. So it kind of became obvious that this was the right thing to do.
Yeah. But for those mid-career knowledge workers, like your audience of this book, do you have any suggestion for them to find the right flag, the right place to plant their flag? Because it's not everyone as lucky as you to find this major problem of the industry and able to solve it and able to share it. So do you have any suggestion for other like the middle career knowledge workers, and what they could do to take the first step? Because I think that could be the most important step, is if they already find the right direction, and the other is just put effort continuously on that direction. But first, how to find a direction? Do you have any suggestion?
Yes. Yes. So this comes back to our conversation earlier about what is the core value that you deliver, right? What problems do you help people solve? And how do you know today how to deliver that value, right? And so I think that's where you start, right? What do you know how to do? What are you good at? What are you an expert at? This doesn't have to be all work-related as well, right? So if there's work-related stuff that you're good at, terrific. Let's talk about that. If you have personal passions, let's say you're a craftsman or a handy person at home. You're very good at fixing things or building things. Let's say you bake cakes, or you're a private chef on the side, or you play music. Whatever it is, right? Whatever your passions are, add those into the mix and really get a sense of where your expertise and passions truly lie and connect. And then I would also consider kind of how big the target audience is for each of those markets, to try to get an initial sense of where you might want to try to plant a flag. But start with the things that you know. And I think that ultimately, if you start to kind of create this Venn diagram of things that I love doing, things that I'm good at, things that I'm passionate about, trends in the world, market trends, political trends, technological trends, consumer trends, that type of thing, and audience size, I think where those three things meet, you're gonna start to come up with some ideas. There's gonna be some overlap there in that Venn diagram, where you're gonna have some ideas about which directions to maybe plant your flag. And it's good to have more than one. I think two or three or four of those are perfectly okay, because you don't know which one's gonna resonate, and you don't know which one is going to work. And so you can start to test each one of those ideas from there, right? You can start tweeting about this stuff, or writing a few blog posts, or recording a short video, or things like that, that will get you a sense of whether or not you're speaking to the right people in a way that they understand, in a way that they value. They are consuming your content, they're sharing your content, right? You're looking for those signals from the market. And so if you start with the things that you know and love today, and then identify a couple of directions you might want to go into, that's a great place to start. Now you might say to yourself, look, the market's crowded, or I work in a field, everything's been said about everything, right? Everything's been said about what I have to say, everything's been said about what I do, and that's true. But here's the thing, and this is the part of the story that you really need to dial in and tell. It's that no one has your story. No one has taken the same steps that you have to get where you are today. Nobody. It's 100% unique to you. And so use that. Tell that story. Let others know what path you took to get where you are today. Let them know that it's okay to take those steps to show where you ended up, or talk to people about the steps that you took that you regret and that you wouldn't do again. But tell your story from your perspective, because no one else has that. That's super, super important. The other bit of advice I'd have for you is, as you start to think about where to plant your flag, is to really consider how to slice the content, or how to kind of carve a slice out for yourself that differentiates you from the pack, right? So let's say you're talking about, you're a financial analyst at a Fortune 1000 company somewhere, right? Cool, and you've done that for 15 years or 10 years, great. What is your area of expertise that you can carve out? Not just financial analysis, but it's financial analysis for the real estate industry. Financial analysis for commercial real estate in Asia, right? Like start to figure out how to dial in that flag in a way that differentiates you enough to let you stand out from the pack, but doesn't limit your audience to the point where there aren't enough of them for you to build a platform. It's a tough equation. It's a tough balance to strike, but that's your goal. That's what you're looking for.
Right. That's great, because a few weeks ago I did an online workshop for some of my audience, and it's about how to find and do the work you love. And we did an Ikigai exercise, which is a Japanese concept about live happier and longer. But there's an exercise about four questions. By answering those four questions, and we can find a connection. Like the first question is, what are you good at? And what do you love? What you can be paid for? And also what the world needs? So everyone has their own answers for each question. Mm-hmm. Someone might have a long list for these are the things I love. And then we can draw like four circles, and some of them can have the combination cross over each other. And in the middle of this full circle is the Ikigai, which means the meaning of being, which means the meaning for your life. You will devote all your time and passion about that. So it's really helpful. And I do find that you mentioned the same thing. So like, what are you good at? What do you love? This could be the major point. And also as a professional, or in some way, things you could be paid for, like as a designer or as a plumber, as any jobs you're get paid for doing that. And also what the world needs, it's about what's the trend in the future. And if you can find a connection in the middle, that's the sweet spot. So do find that it's really some place we can plant our flag. And I really like what you mentioned is the how big the audience is for different subject. For different topics. Take me for example. I like sharing things about design and productivity, like self improvement and book reviews, things like that. But I do find, for example, on YouTube, if you search personal improvement or productivity, there are a lot of channels that has have more than 1 million users, 1 million subscribers for each one. It's quite a large market. But if you search some top design channels, and it seems that like the audience just like quite lower, quite smaller than the other. So it's really good to find the. But it depends on. I think it depends on different subject and also depends on the value for each one to create it. If it's just a specific subject, that's totally all right to have a smaller amount of audience. Yeah. Right. And
yep.
Because we've already talked many things about the book, but there's one thing I really interested in is about this pandemic impact happening all over the world. I guess the book probably had been finished before COVID, right? So there are many uncertainties, and the future of the world is like, it's hard to say where it's going, when it's going to end. So do you think the suggestions or this path in the book, from this book, is still valid, or is there any update you'd like to suggest according to the current COVID situation?
I think that it's more relevant than ever. And I think we talked about this briefly, right? There are folks who are thriving in this pandemic, and there are folks who are struggling. And that's not to blame anybody. Like, I don't mean to say, well, you didn't do this, so you don't have a job now, right? But the point is that I think that there's a couple things here, right? The folks who have created platforms for themselves, generally speaking, are doing okay. If you haven't done that, this is a perfect moment for that, right? This is a wake-up call. This is a reality check that says, look, you can't predict the future. You can't control what's going to happen. There's no such thing as corporate loyalty anymore. So even without a pandemic, there's nothing that says you have a job tomorrow. So how do you future-proof your career in a way that ensures that if the worst happens when it comes to your career, your job at least, you have options? And I believe that this is one way to do that. Is this the only way? No, it's not. But I believe that planting your flag, telling your story, sharing back, and then building a platform of recognized expertise, reputation around that, I think that makes it more important thing to do right now than ever, especially if you find yourself currently looking for work. You've got the time, spend that time to future-proof your career. Start working on this now.
Yeah. I know a lot of people, like a lot of productive people, designers, product managers, or marketers in US or in other markets in other countries are impacted by COVID since March, and some of them get laid off, and some of them just not sure about their future. So, and also the impact might lasting for longer than we expected. So you suggest them to also like take this as a great opportunity or a perfect timing to start planning that. Do you have any practical suggestion for those people? Like probably currently they are looking for the next job.
Yeah.
And updating their CV. Yeah. So what do you recommend?
I mean, look, obviously look for work. I'm not saying don't look for work. That's up. You got to do that. You got to eat. You got to feed your kids. You got to pay the rent. But start to consider the things we've been talking about in this podcast, right? Where would you plant your flag? What stories could you tell? What parts of your experience could you share that others could benefit from? And even if you don't think that you have that, I guarantee you do. And so just start by doing, right? It's just, you don't have to go write a book, right? You can send a tweet, you can write 300 words and publish it on your blog or on Medium or on LinkedIn or on Facebook, whatever it is, right? Start sharing back what you know so you can start to get a sense of what might resonate with people and where you might want to start to build reputation around, where you might want to start to build your platform around. To me, that is the most important thing you can do right now, outside of looking for work. Always look for work right now. That's right. Super important if you don't have it. Yeah,
it's a priority, but also keep an eye or spend some time, invest some time on this long-term planning and execution could be also as equally important. And I'm just curious, how does the COVID 19 affected your work, if there's any? And and do you have any, like, how do you, if there's any, how do you cope with it?
Look, I mean, it's really been interesting because, you know, I spend most of my time in my office on Zoom calls now. Is that better than spending time on airplanes and hotel rooms? Yes. Yes, it is. Significantly better. I was burning out on corporate travel. I am burning out on Zoom calls, and I'm figuring out how to get ahead of that at this point. But the what I think has happened here is we've traveled in a time machine to some extent. You know, this pandemic has leaped us forward a decade in the legitimization of remote and distributed work. The tools will catch up. The ability to collaborate will only get better. Mm-hmm. And the realities that we have to meet face to face all the time are, you know, kind of called into question when we can, you know, many people can keep their businesses running this way without having to go back to the way things were in the past. You know, I work with organizations who have 10,000 person call centers that they would never have gotten rid of the call center, right? Mm-hmm. But overnight, all 10,000 of those people had to start working from home. And yeah, the first couple of weeks were messy, but today, 3 months later, that organization, those people are servicing customers from their homes. The physical structure that they had to go to every day didn't make sense. It doesn't make sense now, doesn't make sense anymore, right? They never would have gotten rid of that in 5 years. 10 years maybe, right? Yeah. So there's a time machine effect here that forced us to really make some decisions very, very quickly. And now we're learning how to manage those decisions because we didn't have a choice. So I think there's obviously a tremendous loss of life and tremendous pain and suffering and loss of work and income and the economies. But there are also tremendous leaps forward that we've made in the last 3-4 months that I think are going to stick with us and make things better as we move forward.
Yeah. And also, like, after this, in the post-COVID thing, flexibility and work from home or work remotely. So this type of the digital nomad lifestyle is getting more and more popular. And what could be the skills you suggest or you think is the most important to for individuals to develop, like, no matter what the jobs they are working? Because we already mentioned, like, you think writing or communication would be something quite important. Are there any other skills that you think will be important for this post-COVID environment?
Agility, adaptability. To me, those are the skills. You know, it's and that's going to be particularly difficult for mid-career people. I think early career people, if they don't have it already, they'll learn it very, very quickly. But I think mid-career and late-career people are going to struggle with this. There's going to be change. There's going to be radical change, and it's going to challenge your notions of what it means to go to work, to do work, to succeed at work, to excel and progress and be rewarded for it. And you're going to have to learn new skills. You're going to have to push yourselves I see it with my kids. My kids, you know, they're in virtual school right now. The younger teachers, they adapted pretty quickly. It wasn't perfect. It wasn't flawless. But they know the tools. They knew the tools already. And so they adapted. They got creative. They're learning very quickly how to make the best of the situation. The older teachers, the ones who've been teaching for 30 plus years, 25, 30, you know, 35 years, they're really struggling with this. They're really struggling with this because it's a completely new way of working. It's a completely new way of engaging and teaching. And so I think if you learn anything from this, it's, you know, embrace uncertainty and embrace continuous change, right? That's where the agility and the adaptability come from. And just, you know, don't take any new set way of working for granted, because inevitably something else was shifted shortly thereafter. At this point, the pace of change is just too fast.
Right. Just get ready to change and always be agile when doing
exactly.
anything.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Thank you, Jeff. That's a lot of questions, and I do have a few more, but I don't want to take it longer than we arranged, like top to 1 hour could be ready to 1 hour of your time. But at the last, I would like to share, can I share a personal forever employable story?
So please, that's amazing.
It's just happened, so I'm really exciting to share it. And what I mentioned, a few months ago, I started to it's a few years ago, I started to share something I've learned during the work or when I'm learning design. But at the beginning, I always have this feel, because I'm not a native English speaker, and also I'm just in the early stage of my UX career, so there will be, like what you mentioned, a lot of things, all the things need to be said, already be said. So I had this feel, but I just try to share things, no matter how small it is, some small success or something I've learned from daily practices. And a few weeks ago, one of my colleagues find a position from US. It's a UX, it's a design bootcamp based on mentorship. So they provide one-on-one mentor for online students to learn coding or data or design. So this colleague of mine, he just shared the information with me that seems you could be interested about this, because you keep sharing things on your social media, LinkedIn. Yeah, probably you will be interesting to become a mentor. And I saw the information and said, yeah, why don't I try it? And I apply it. And after one or two interviews, so this morning I got the invitation. They are happy to have me on board as a US
nice.
Mentor. So, which is like
amazing.
I can have three students each week and give them some suggestion, guidance with my real project experience. Yeah, things like that. So I think that I didn't reach out in the beginning, but it's just fine. Like. Job or work started to find me, but I need to I do need to make the first step, is to start to tell the story, so it could happen like a sequence. So yeah, that's I think it's a perfect, it's a good example of what you're trying to say from this book, to be forever employable. It's not just focusing in this work you're doing, but also starting to share and just build your credibility, and also to keep providing value. But it might not happen immediately, but after a while you don't know what will happen. So this is something really exciting to share with you. first.
Amazing.
Yeah, exactly.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
That's great. Congratulations. And you never know where that's going to lead. So good for you, man. That's great to hear.
Yeah, thank you very much, Jeff. Yeah, so do you have any other things you would like to mention or discuss about this book or anything else?
The book comes out on June 16th. You can get it on Amazon in every format that you like. And then, of course, if you go to my website at jeffgotthealth.com, more information there, or foreveremployable.com will redirect you there as well. So that would be great. And I'd be super appreciative if you do buy the book that you write a review of it on Amazon. Reviews go a long way, and I'd be very grateful if that's something that you could do after you read the book.
Yeah, for everyone who's listening, yeah, if you want to be forever employable, just grab a copy and write a comment, write a book review. By the way, Jeff, have you considered to publish to another language, for example, Chinese or other language?
Always, absolutely. Let's see. It's always, you know, these are experiments, right? So there's always cost and invest in translations and redesigning of the books and that type of thing. So if it does well in English, I'm absolutely open to other versions of the book in other languages. Chinese would certainly be one I would look for. Spanish as well, right? Languages spoken by lots and lots of people. So absolutely. Short answer is I'm definitely interested. Let's see how the English version does. If it does well, as I hope it does, we can expand to other languages.
Yeah, because I knew a few Chinese publishers, so probably can help, yeah, for the next step. Right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jeff, for your time, and really appreciate that you take this opportunity and share a lot of insight and story behind the book. And I really wish that the book will be, yeah, bestseller, or yeah, and look forward to see and read more insights from you. Yeah, thank you very much, and it's the evening time or the morning time in your time zone right now?
It's morning. It's 11:00 in the morning.
All right, so just have a great day. And for me,
thank you very much, Bear.
Yeah, it's in the evening. So, right, cool. And I will let you know when I upload this podcast, I will let you know later. Right.
Perfect. And I'll help promote it as well. So I really appreciate it, Bear. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Yeah. Thank you, Jeff. Have a great
All right.
Have a great day. Bye.
See you later. Bye.